Blog Talk Radio.
It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes, it will. It's been too hard living, but I'm afraid to die. I don't know what's up there beyond the sky. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. I go to the movie and I go downtown. Somebody keep telling me don't hang around. It's been a long time coming, but I know a change gonna come. Oh, yes it will. Then I go to my brother. Hey, brother, help me please. But he winds up knocking me back down on my knees. Lord, there have been times that I thought I could last for long. But I know a change gon' come. Oh, yes it will.
Good evening, everyone, and welcome to another edition of West Talk Fort Worth. I'm Carrie Hines, your host. Thank you for joining us for what should be another very interesting show. Listen, a reminder, the music you just heard, we do not have the rights to. And also, we're going to ask you to please click, tag, and share. Tell someone Let's Talk Fort Worth is on the air. And tonight, we're talking about the Aaron Dean trial. The sentencing phase has ended. The close has happened from the prosecution and from the state. From the prosecution and the defense. Y'all, listen, it's been a long day. A lot has been going on. That said, a lot of very interesting things were said about probation and the fact that he should get 20 years. The fact that the defense almost appeared to feel that this should be a slap on the wrist for Aaron Dean and he should be able to get on with his life. We found out that probation would be under the supervision of Judge Gallagher, and it would be the equivalent of 15 minutes a month and 3 hours in a year. Is that sufficient for a sentence for someone who murdered a person who was in their home not doing anything? That's what we're going to talk about tonight. Also, we're going to talk about the fact that Manuel Mata was brought up again, and the judge appeared a little shaken, in my opinion. He appeared to be kind of backpedaling and trying to explain why he did what he did to Manuel Mata on Friday. We understand that Mata's bond will be reinstated. We don't know if he's out, and if Mata is, we pray he calls in tonight. But it's supposed to be reinstated, and Mata should be released today sometime. We know that his attorney released a video on YouTube today explaining play-by-play about what happened in the courtroom that day when they arrested Mata, and he said that all of Mata's rights were violated, and they are planning to sue. So all of that is on the table tonight, and I see some of my guests are here, and I'm going to open up the phone lines. I see Attorney Leon Reed is in the building. Good evening, Attorney Reed. How are you?
Good evening. I'm well. Thank you.
Good. I see Christopher Marino's in the building. Good evening.
Hey, how you doing, Carrie?
Good. I see Adrian Smith is in the building. Good evening, Adrian.
Hey, Carrie. Good evening. You can mute me, Carrie. I'll raise my hand when I want to talk. I'm at work, but I'm listening.
Okay, gotcha. Okay. And I see another number I'm not familiar with, so I'm scared to open this phone line, but I'm going to open it 817-478. How are you? Good evening. 817-478.
Yeah, this is Tamara Church.
Hi, Tamara Church. And I definitely want to speak with you. As a matter of fact, Attorney Reed, this person said that they went to church with Aaron Dean. Am I understanding that correct, Tamara?
We did not go to church together. We went to similar. His family is attending a church that we previously attended. We did engage with them with homeschool extracurricular activities my children are in, with a choir with Gail Armstrong. I know her. Mm-hmm. I was in an adult homeschool choir with Ashley Dean. We sang together. That was the same choir that Aaron and Adam were also in as well for 1 year. That was about 10 years ago.
Attorney Reed, do you have questions?
No, I don't have any questions about his background or where he attended church.
Remember they put so much emphasis on that in closing about how he was a good choir boy and how he was a church man. Remember that? He was a good Christian. Remember how they said that?
Absolutely. I can tell you this. There are opportunities to cross-examine people and on certain things that people say, and sometimes you don't even bother cross-examining them. You hold stuff till close and just make a closing argument, because then there's no opportunity to refute or repair what was said. But as a Christian man, as a God-fearing Christian man, I would have expected him to get up and say, you know, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, when he had the chance, that I'm so bothered, my spirit has been bothered, the Lord has been, you know, I'm so sorry for what happened. That even if he didn't think that he was wrong, you understand, he could just say, I'm so sorry that this family had to go through this. This was a, you know, but his disposition was, yeah, I did it. I'd do it again. If I was in her house and she came around the corner with a gun and I'm in her house, you know, I'm shooting her again. She sounded like a dog moaning on her last breath, you know. And so if that is his representation of Christianity, then I will state it's no wonder that for the first time in U.S. history there are more people who identify as non-religious than there are as people who identify with organized religion.
I agree. But, you know, a lot of people are kind of saying this sounds more like a cult. So since she has been to this church, was this something more like a cult or was this like a church? Tamara.
Okay, so the extracurricular involvement that we had with the choir that he was very involved with and with the music ministry, yes, it's very much cult-like. It's very connected to the Duggars. Josh Duggar, who was sentenced, if those who know of that situation. Very much
narcissistic. You're talking about the reality show, the Duggars.
Yep. Very patriarchal, very misogynistic. The church that he went to, one of the family members' daughters married a Duggar. So it's very linked together. I have left the church to address him. We left the church 4 years ago because of the abuse in the church.
Did you use the word abuse in the church?
Yes. Narcissism, okay. Abuse, pastors that are harming women and children locally. So my husband and I have left the church. We have not left our faith, but we have left the church.
Do black people attend this church?
Okay, so the church that they went to at Fair Park Baptist Church, before Redeemer Church, predominantly no. Very, very, very. There may have not been any black families that I know of, but I did not attend with him at Fair Park Baptist Church, but we're very involved with their ministries in the music area. At Redeemer, I know of Anthony Moore, if you want to Google him and his name. He did attend there when he went to seminary at Southwest Baptist Theological Seminary. To say about Anthony Moore. He was a pastor for a short time at the Village Church. Also, there was another family, the Joneses, that were black. He was going to seminary. They moved in from Maryland so he could go to the seminary. Beyond that, it was very predominantly white, very predominantly homeschool, very religious, very much Gothard, Bill Gothard. If you look him up through IVLP, this is the cult that I'm talking about. This is some Quiverful movement, stay-at-home daughter movement. This is predominantly the worldview that they had. I have not been in relationship or in communication or in the same group that my kids are all graduated, as theirs are obviously too. So it's been 10 years. But this is who I knew them as 10 years ago.
Let me ask two questions to come to mind, and then we're going to come back to you in just a bit. One thing comes to mind is that if I were a devout Christian, as the defense Bob Gill stated that Aaron Dean was, I would think that the very first person who would be willing to speak for me would be the pastor. And I did not see the pastor in the courtroom speaking, to the character of Aaron Dean that Bob Gill told us was so fantastic. So did you question why the pastor wasn't there?
So Aaron Rodgers is the pastor. He was there at seminary with his wife and children when I attended 10 to 12 years ago. Right, correct. He wasn't there. And they've been at that church for 8 years. I think that was what somebody said on the stand. Somebody mentioned that. That's a long time. I left there 17 years ago.
That's interesting. Yeah. Okay, second question. And then, like I said, we're going to come right back to you in a little bit. Second question is, one thing I know is that, when people get very comfortable with people, they tend to let their real selves come out. That said, you said this church was predominantly white or was all white. Was there a certain overtone or undertone that racism was okay or that you looked down on people that were of color? Was some of that going on?
It was segregationist. It definitely did not integrate. It was very much an us versus them, religious, non-religious. But your religion had to be like their religion, okay? So that's why I think you see that it's very patriarchal, very much family idolatry. Husbands over the wives, over the children. There are stay-at-home daughter movement. I don't know if you know what that is. Pardon?
I can kind of tell by the the title, but go ahead.
The daughters are to stay under the submission of their fathers until they get married and then pass over that submission to their husbands. So for women and children, it is a very difficult environment. And so there are dominionism or reconstructionists too. There was somebody showed me this article that was written 3 years ago regarding his faith background, Reformed Reconstructionist, which means reconstructing the government to have people in power that are of faith that can control. So if you, and I mean, I'll let you do your own research on that. That's not something I would quote myself necessarily, but it's just something to be educated about and to understand the mindset behind it.
Wow. You've given me an earful. Tell you what, let me put you back on hold, and I'm coming back to you in just a little while. I'm going to go back to Attorney Reed. Attorney Reed, how do you process what she just said?
Well, first of all, if she was the subject of any abuse, my heart goes out to her. That's certainly a sad situation, and if I'm recalling that this was the sect that ended up encamped out in near south of Sweetwater, and there were a bunch of attorneys out, you know, trying to represent the children, I think, and it's particularly young females, if my memory serves me correctly. But again, and I'll say this, you know, I try not to be judgmental of other people's religions. You understand?
Yeah.
But when your religion is under the same umbrella as my religion, that being Christianity, because I have Islam in my family, first cousins, you understand, who are actually imams, you know. So, but I have, it, you know, so I'm open to other people's religion, you know, your views. But when, as a Christian, we all get lumped into the same category. And so when you have these evangelical folk who say, you know, will stand out on a bridge on a 100-degree day with a sign that say, send those kids back, you know, without even questioning what it took for a mother to send an 8-year-old daughter on a 1,200-mile journey with a stranger, you know, and hope that their daughter can get, you know, to America and have a better life than what she has there because she may be subject to rape or kidnapping or, you know, forced prostitution. What it took for that mother to say, I'm turning over my child, you understand? And for people to have that type of Christianity, I can do without. So when I hear people proclaim themselves Christian, in that vein, I'm quick to separate. Your God must not be my God. Because that is some stuff that my, you know, the God that I serve and the Jesus that I know would not condone. And so that's where I draw the line when I hear people proclaim Christianity as their faith and then turn around and just do some stuff that is not in keeping with any biblical teachings that I know.
Well, so let's talk about then what Bob Gill said about religion versus what was going on in the courtroom today. How did he break that down?
Let me say this. I was in court during the closing argument, so I didn't hear specifically what he said. So I apologize in that regard. I'm reticent to comment on it.
Okay, Marino, I'm sure you heard it. What did he say?
Yeah, the big point of that whole conversation was a phrase that he made trying to emphasize to the jury that we are not here to contemplate God's law. We are here to contemplate man's law.
That's what he said.
That's all. It was pretty much contradicting what the message that he had for his witness, for the, you know, the image that he was trying to project. But that was just him trying to get away, in my opinion, as an attorney, not in a personal mode, but as an attorney, that was just him trying to artfully be like, look, they've totally failed on projecting the Christian virtues. So let me just throw this back on the world.
I agree. I thought, in my opinion, Miles Brissette, Bob Gill failed today in closing. For whatever reason, he fumbled. And it is my belief that they never intended to get here. I think they expected that he was going to be found not guilty, so therefore there was never supposed to be a closing argument for sentencing. And he appeared to be ill-prepared for it today, and that was very obvious. And some of the things he said, in my opinion, they borderline on insensitive to Tatiana Jefferson's family when he said things like and now I'm finding my notes on this. It was absolutely, it seemed like a man who, I don't know, you're angry because you're here and you're trying to figure out where do I go from here. And I think his statement, I think what he planned to say for some reason did not come off right. One of the things he said in closing statements was he asked Aaron Dean was being punished for, like he didn't do anything. He said he was hired by Fort Worth PD. He was trained by Fort Worth PD, and he was dispatched by Fort Worth PD that night as though some kind of way, you know, I don't know what that means. I mean, if they spent money training you and they dispatched you, that meant, in my opinion, that you should execute the training. But he also went on to say that Aaron Dean was protecting him and his partner. He went on to say he is culpable for what? He was trained in the Fort Worth PD Training Academy to eliminate a threat. And then he said, what are we going to rehabilitate him from? And then they said he is a person in the least need of rehabilitation. He is a God-fearing and law-abiding citizen of the community. And then he said Dr. Kyle Clayton didn't follow Aaron Dean around in church, the choir, or engineering school. I just thought he said he appeared to be implying that Kyle Clayton, the psychologist that told us that Aaron Dean was not fit to be a police officer, got it wrong. And so I just didn't even get how he was trying to somehow say that the other three psychologists basically got it right. I mean, that was ridiculous. And he said that Aaron Dean was a Christian man. And he told this is the part I hated. He told the jury to be careful with the verdict because it would send the wrong message to police officers across the country that, you know, if you follow your training and you are defending yourself, then in essence, you are putting yourself where Aaron Dean is. And I thought that lacked everything that you need in a closing argument, Attorney Rate.
Well, see, the irony of that is the police are called to protect and serve the public. No
right.
police officer that I've ever met has been mm-hmm. drafted to be a police officer in any municipality.
Mm-hmm.
They all volunteer to protect
right.
and serve the public. The only person that Aaron Dean is and was trying to protect was himself, and he's trying to serve himself. That's where the narcissism comes in. That's where the doctor's assessment of him was very accurate. This rookie cop, after being on the street for less than a year, has killed someone.
Mm-hmm.
So he was right, and the other three were wrong, which really should his testimony is going to bear even more weight in a civil trial, because once that man told you, I don't think this guy should be a cop, and the city of Fort Worth went ahead and hired him anyway, they hired him at their own risk and peril and the peril of the public and to the death of this young woman. So they should have taken the freaking hint the first time. But this man is self-serving, and he only was there. He was there to protect himself. He was not drafted. He got into a job where he thought he could be smug and arrogant and condescending, which is not the and look for action and adventure. And that's not qualities that anyone should want in any department, certainly not where I live.
Well, don't you think the defense, I mean, for the defense to say that the psychologist that said that he was narcissistic and basically all puffed up and, you know, he had the superiority complex and he was domineering, don't you think that that guy got it right and the other three got it wrong? So it made no sense to bring that up in the closing sentencing phase?
The one guy absolutely got it right. There's a thing in law called a res. Okay, res judicata. If an airplane crashes, ares in Latin means the thing speaks for itself.
Mm-hmm.
So if an airplane crashes from the sky, something went wrong. You understand? Mm-hmm. It's ares, you know. And so in this instance, this man told you up front, you don't want this guy. And so now the fact that we're in a trial because he killed a young woman, it speaks for itself. He should not have been hired on as a cop.
So Gil failed on, I mean, he flubbed on, he shouldn't have brought it up. I just thought, like, did he, like, have, like, a brain freeze or something? Because to me, that was the last thing that should have been brought up in the sentencing phase, that the psychologist, you know, that said he shouldn't be there was wrong, and the other three were right, yet this man had killed somebody, and we're in a murder trial, and he's saying that the other three knew what they were talking about. Crazy.
Because his position is Aaron Dean got it right. And if his position, because at the end of the day, you got to argue something. Okay, you've been paid a lot of money, you know, come up with some kind of defense. And so that's the horse that they're riding.
Okay.
Aaron Dean got it right. And if Aaron Dean got it right and he didn't do anything wrong, then those three psychologists got it right as well, and he's a perfectly fine cop. You have to argue something. The question is whether there's somebody over the juror on the jury panel, you know, over there sampling that stuff enough to say, you know, yeah, give me a whole plate full.
Gotcha. All right, y'all, we got to go back to the phone line. I'm sorry.
Harry,
Go ahead, Chris.
Harry, real quick, I'm going to shoot something about on top of what Leon was pointing at. Is there's this other aspect that I was sitting there saying is the defense and the prosecution, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And it goes into the whole system, you know, the systemic thing, but real particularly in specific to this trial, what I would ask people to analyze and the lawyers that are out there is we have this really what limited the ability for the defense to be effective and the prosecution to be effective is that they've really got their wires crossed, intertwined with each other as far as the witnesses. You know, you got the Fort Worth police, you really got to look at the schematics after this is over, and we need to learn how to flesh this kind of thing out in the justice system. But what I'm saying is we got this commentary about, I heard a lot of questions today, and, it, you know, nobody was hitting it. Why didn't the defense use their three witnesses, call their three witnesses to impeach that Mr. Clayton, you know? And what you got to understand, it's just, I mean, they didn't do that because one of two reasons is they didn't want to expose any more they didn't want to compromise the foundational systemic thing anymore because those, we don't know they didn't name those. There was no documentation about who those, I don't know what's in the discovery about his override, but they don't want that getting out. They don't want that on public record. Just like with the case on the state, I was like, why didn't you call Officer Hoffman and Officer Cotton, who were the first ones to respond to the scene after they called for backup after the shooting? It's the same. That's how I'm saying the wires are really crossed. It's time to overhaul. I mean, I'm not an anarch. I'm not calling for revolution or anarchy or this, that, whatever. Police oversight, however you got to do it. But we cannot. You know, after this trial is over, I want the justice for Tatiana's family, but the subterfuge is what we've had going on. Every single time a cop goes on trial the subterfuge of police accountability is the big distraction here. So until we get that subterfuge solved, we're never going to have a just outcome to a trial, over with these kind of dynamics in Fort Worth or Tarrant County.
I agree.
Before you go to the lines, and I know you got to get to them, folks, don't hang up. There are two quick things I want to point out.
Okay.
You know, one, this is the first, it doesn't happen very often that prosecutors of the same county have to prosecute police departments within that county. And so it doesn't happen very often that you get so many defense attorneys, you know, cheering on the state when at the same time we got docket that morning and we're fighting with the, you know, with the state in other courts. You know, so all of the conversations that are taking place are really unusual in that legal sense. You understand? You just don't have a bunch of defense attorneys, you know, sharing a bunch of strategies, you know, that the state should use. You know, and because we all know the other defense attorneys and we've worked with them on other cases, and the fact that they're the defense attorneys on this job, to us, you know, hey, that's their job. That's what they got paid to do. They got to put forth some defense. But it also brings up, and this kind of goes to his point, somebody said to me, Leon, anytime a district attorney has to prosecute a police officer, why isn't there a law that requires that the prosecutors come from out of county? Because the prosecutors in Tamarack County routinely go out, work with the departments. Shoot, they may have called in, you know, they're subject to calling in cops, you know, over several years and had them testify and locking people up and so on. And then that police officer does something out of pocket. Now they got to turn around and prosecute this guy, and they go out to the police department and train them on how to do stuff better, and they build relationships with the police department and the police officer. Why isn't it required by law that any time you have a case involving a police officer, that an attorney from out of county who has no connections with that police department, we don't care, we're coming in, and we're going to prosecute this like you or anybody else? To me, I think that has a little bit of merit. So I just wanted to plant that seed, and you can go ahead, go to the callers.
All right. Listen, if you just tuned in tonight, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Gary Hunt, your host, and we're talking about the Aaron Dean trial. The jury is currently deliberating, and we understand they have been sequestered. So that means after, I know, at least 5 hours by the time of the close today, normally I think about five, they had already been deliberating about 5 hours, and they couldn't come to an agreement, I guess, as to what the sentencing was going to be. So tonight we're talking about probation. Probation was put on the table by the defense. We know that 20 years was asked for by the prosecution. So, y'all, where are we going with this? Are we going to fall somewhere in the middle, or, you know, what will happen? Who knows? So tonight, if you have a question or a comment, the call-in number is 515-605-9321. Then press 1 once connected. 817-946. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk Fort Worth. Okay.
This is Zero Bank. Good evening. I'm just going to observe and wait for my comments after the sentencing.
Okay. Oh, you're gonna do what?
I'm just gonna sit back and observe and listen to the, you know, your program, and then wait for the sentencing before I make a comment.
Oh, that'll work.
Wait,
okay, I'll put you
on reserve close.
I'll put you on mute. Okay. We're gonna go to 682-250. Good evening. You're on Let's Talk What Works.
Good evening, Sister Carrie, Brother Malik, everyday, all-day revolutionary. Never to be compromised, never be a gatekeeper, never eat the crow. It's kind of typical what we see when you ain't got no color folks on the jury. Let's not forget that. And, you know, we got to understand Dean is being tried by his peers, non-African jury, all white jury, some Latino, one Asian descent, white prosecutor, white defense, white judge. So that's why it's sketchy. And, you know, the police department, It's just a hamster wheel. The POA pay, invest in the judges, they invest in the prosecutors, give money to their campaign. So when they do get in these situations, you know, they gonna get two of the lesser evils. They either gonna get off or get a little slap on the hand. It's the fundamental practices of the system that's been going on. You know, if the police don't catch the bad guys, the judge ain't gonna have no job. The DA ain't gonna have no job. People like Leon Reed ain't gonna have no job. It's a setup. And that's just how the system works. And so this ain't, it's an orchestrated design. And who paying for it? Taxpayers.
See, I saw a shift.
The only thing I can say is that we getting where we get. We got to put the right people in the right positions so we don't have to be sitting on Kerry Hunt's talk show wondering why this, that, and the other. Don't act like these non-indigenous people in Fort Worth, a whole bunch of Negro lovers. We're not going to play that game. Not going to play that game. We've been here long enough. You've been here for as long as I have. We know what they think and how these people are. And so we can talk about it all day until we vote and change what's bothering us and get rid of bothering us, black, white, polka dot, stripe, or indifferent. But I'm going to tell you, sister, there's a whole bunch of people that look like us that's on that other side. Because every time they chuck them some money, do our tax dollars, these Negroes play gatekeeper and get real quiet and try to act like they're concerned. See, if you go behind these closed doors and don't come out and tell us what's going on, you part of it. You part of that sick evil that's taking us down. And see, I move different. See, my mentor told me, brother, on sometimes, even though if you don't want to go, show up. Show up. You ain't got to say nothing just to see what's going on. But if you go behind closed doors with them folks and you don't come back and tell us what's happening and what the deal is, and you huddle up in your own little secret little huddles with these little raggedy cliques that's going on in Fort Worth that these folks don't think I know about. You know what I'm saying? This is a problem. We, a lot of things we create for ourselves, and we're doing it to ourselves. If you wasn't born in the Crow, you ain't got no business acting like you born in Jim Crow. You know, we don't fight. I don't fight for that mess. My kids weren't subjected to that mess, and I'm not going to strangle them with that mess. We get it. But it's time for us to move to liberation and empowerment. That's what we teach our children. And going down there, buck dancing for these folks and act like you speak for everybody. I got a problem with that. Because we can draw a line from 76134, 133 to 132. So if you're not going to bring all your brothers and sisters together, no matter where we at geographically, we should know what you're going down there behind them closed doors talking about. And I hope they're listening. I ain't scared of nothing. Y'all know I ain't scared of nothing. And I'm tired of this playing this game, Sister Kerry. We sit up here and go at each other for what? Now ain't the time for that. And I'm glad you spoke up like you did, Sister Kerry. And I hope that we can be on one accord. But it's time for us to stop dancing around these problems and try to fix these problems and come up with solutionary problems. And then you sit up here and go out and try to talk to these young brothers and sisters about they come up behind closed doors. This pastor don't like this pastor. That pastor don't like that pastor. This group don't like that group. But y'all acting just like these young kids. And then wonder where they get it from.
It's time out.
Either you're going to walk the straight. We're going to walk it straight. And if my brother or sister, Sister Kerry, I want everybody who listens, if you got a problem with your brother or sister, reach out to them on the phone and have a private conversation and try to get something resolved.
Let me put you on hold, Malik, and let me catch some more calls. Adrian, we're going to go to you, and then we're going to have to call Benson Gillis, who is not able to reach the phone line tonight. So, Adrian, good evening again. Adrian?
Hey, Carrie, I'm here. Give me 1 second. Give me 1 second.
Okay, go ahead. I'm going to get Carrie. Mr. Benson. Go ahead while you're doing that.
Hey, Carrie.
Yeah, go ahead.
Okay, hey Carrie, a quick observation mm-hmm. that you mentioned, and I'm glad you brought it up. When you mm-hmm. stated how Bob get you tried to remind the jury about how their decision how it looked with law enforcement. Mm-hmm. I'm a person. I'm just sorry, y'all. My mama told me, she the first one told me I talk a lot. So yeah, I talk a lot. But in talking a lot, I've learned how to. You know, I've gotten better. I got wiser with it, but I learned how to decipher when people are talking and what they're saying. So I understand mm-hmm. indirect talk. To me, if you listen to what he was telling the jurors, he mm-hmm. kind of was, he was sending an indirect threat to the jury. I'm sorry, y'all. That's my perception. Letting them know, police, he said law enforcement is watching. Mm-hmm. He says police are they're watching. Y'all, you know, quote unquote, I said, why is he telling the jury this? You know what I'm saying? It ain't mm-hmm. so much about them getting it. I think so much about the right or wrongness. I think he was more or less letting them know we got access to you. Now, us who view from home, we can't see the jury. Only people who can see the jury are the people who are actually there in the physical. You know what I'm saying? So mm-hmm. I couldn't tell you how a juror looks. I couldn't say how the man who's sitting in the back row, top left. I couldn't do that. But when I was just listening to his words, I was like, whoa, he's indirectly threatening, putting a threat towards the juror. But people who just listening, just to be listening, they won't catch it. I caught it, though. Mm-hmm. Another thing, mm-hmm. I feel like his closing statement, I feel like, wow, the power of God. That man began to speak, and it's like he was trying to find words. I said, whoa. Mm-hmm. I said, yeah. Keep talking. Mm-hmm. Continue talking. Mm-hmm. From that point, I said, oh, yeah, he out of there. He out of there. Mm-hmm. I said, he don't fumble. He has fumbled. Mm-hmm. Another observation, Judge Gallagher. Whoa.
Oh.
He know he effed up. He know he effed up. He backtracked so heavily this morning. I was like, yep, they got you, buddy.
Yeah.
I will say this too, Carrie. We have to be. Because Brother Malik is speaking, he is speaking to something regarding us. We also mm-hmm. got to be more situational aware when we find ourselves in these spaces. That mm-hmm. guy, they basically showed their hand. He said, we have had undercover officers
yeah.
in plain clothes mm-hmm. sitting amongst these people.
Yeah.
And people, grab a hold of your emotions. Know who's sitting amongst you. No, mm-hmm. no your situation awareness, basically.
Mm-hmm.
Situation awareness. That guy said we had plain clothes, this or that, sitting amongst people, observing things. Ooh, that's how they've been getting all the information.
I think
the jury, they had a long rest over the weekend. I thought maybe they was going to knock it out the park this morning, but I guess they need another day. So let's. I guess give them the benefit of the doubt, to give them another day. Hopefully they get this right. I keep saying hopefully they get it right. I'm still standing in the power of prayer and just letting it just have its way. Mm-hmm. And last, I'm going to say this last, and I'm going to just mute my phone.
Mm-hmm.
Manuel Mata, like you say, even WFAA said he was out there, but he wasn't saying anything. Mm-hmm. What's her name? Who's that? The lady from WFAA, I'm getting her name wrong, but she said, yes, she said Mata was out there. But yeah, she said Mata was out there, but he was recording. He was setting up the record like anybody else. He wasn't saying anything to these people. But what they have done, they have elevated Manuel even more with this. See,
yeah.
Now you're going to have more people trying to figure out who is this Manuel Mata. Who is Manuel Mata? And to know that, I've been thinking Manuel was like he's doing this alone. He needs some help. No, Manuel got some people that's that's he got a strong backing. He got a strong backing. But I think more or less they were mad because Manuel had exposed the police positioning that they were waiting for a verdict. I think he exposed them. You shared the video, he exposed them, their positioning. Mm-hmm. They were waiting for something to happen, but you know, and I'll mute myself. I'll mute my phone until I come up with something else. Thank you, Kerry.
All right. So listen, we're going to go to the phone lines. We're going to have to call Mr. Benson Gillis. Listen, if you just tuned in, you're listening to Let's Talk Fort Worth. I'm Kerry Hines, your host. Tonight, we're talking about the fact that the jury for the Aaron Dean trial has
keep
been
it straight, keep it real.
Say what?
Keep it real.
Yeah, they have been sequestered. So, y'all, listen, we're just waiting on pins and needles to see what the verdict is going to be. But Mr. Gillis was not able to get into the phone line tonight, so we're going to give him a call and see if we can get him on the line and see what happens. We're dialing his number now. He inboxed me on Facebook and said he was not able to get through. I don't hear the dial tone, but it's supposed to be going on. I think we've connected him. Good evening, Mr. Gillis. I didn't hear anything ringing. Did y'all hear that? Because I didn't hear it.
It's ringing now.
Got to hear that. Hello. Mr. Gillis? Hi, how
yes,
are you?
Ma'am. Well, I'm doing okay. Are you doing okay?
Yeah, I am. Welcome to Let's Talk Fort Worth.
Yeah, welcome. Let's Talk Radio. How you? How everyone doing?
Everybody's good. Y'all good?
Oh, yeah, we fine.
Okay, what's yeah, I'm just listening.
Oh, you're
I'm listening.
Okay. Oh, I thought you told me to call. Okay, we'll mute you. Not a problem. We'll mute you. Let me find you something.
Let me say something procedurally real quick.
Sure.
That I've shared on the on the nightly debrief that we do. There is, when it comes to jury punishment, every juror must agree to the exact same punishment.
Right.
If one says 15 years and another one says 16 years, you know, if they don't agree on which one or the other, all 12 of them must agree to the exact same punishment, then you could have a mistrial on punishment only, on punishment only. Now, it used to be that if we got a mistrial in either phase, guilt, innocence, or punishment, you did the whole trial over.
Wow.
But about 10 years or so ago, the state legislature changed the law, and if you get a mistrial on punishment, then you got to call another jury, have another voir dire, go through all of that, and then just present the punishment evidence. But it's best to have the jury that sat through the whole guilt-innocence phase and saw all of the evidence, had a chance to measure all of the credibility of all the witnesses and so forth. So why does that matter? That may be why that 5 hours later they haven't reached a consensus.
Wow.
You know, somebody may be in there hollering for high end. Somebody may be in there hollering for low end, and they just haven't met where they're going to meet yet. And so, you know, that's why, you know, these things can take long even on punishment phase because all of them have to agree. And if they don't all agree, then, yes, you could have a mistrial. Now, you have a mistrial either here or if he goes up, he's already been convicted, so they're going to file an appeal. I've always maintained that. So if an appellate court sends it back and says, have a new trial, they were actually right on a point or something, well, then all of your motions to transfer venue come up again. And that's where some of these people who are doing acts that bring attention to the court are getting sworn in as witnesses. Because on a mistrial, the defense team will call in this person, that person, you were out there doing this, did this person threaten you, you understand what I'm saying? And so when someone says, oh, you can't Why are they being sworn in as witnesses? Well, because you, if they have a mistrial or something goes wrong and they have to, and the defense files another motion to change venue, you just hit the witness list. That doesn't mean they have to call you, but you just hit the witness list. Are you following me? So, so that's where we are. That, you know, all 12 jurors must agree on the exact same sentence. And that's why they're back there, because they're not agreeing. And so, you know, you can take that how you want it, whether there are some people wanting more and some people wanting less, but they're not back there agreeing. If they'd agreed, they'd have been out already. And so I'll say this, and then I'll let you get back to the lines. My position on that, like, look, ladies and gentlemen of the jury, you've already taken 21 to 99 years off the table.
Correct.
By convicting him of manslaughter, you've capped it at 2 to 20.
Right.
This lady will, you know, and so, you know.
Wait,
so
I'm sorry, repeat that. Repeat exactly what you just said.
Murder is a first-degree felony, 5 to 99 or life. Manslaughter is 2 to 20. Because they convicted him of manslaughter, they've taken 21 to 99 or life off the table.
Right.
So the most they could give him is 20. Mm-hmm. And so that's where you can come from with the state. Max him out on that 20. He's not going to get 25. He's not going to get 30 for his reckless and wanton acts. This man is still dangerous. He doesn't think he did anything wrong. That makes him even more dangerous. You know, there are ways that you can kind of, that you, you know, and we each have to stay within our own personalities and when we're arguing stuff. And folk who just grew up in the Black Baptist Church in the hood, we just have a different flavor when we bringing it to you. And but I keep going back to that movie with Matthew McConaughey and Samuel L. Jackson, A Time to Kill, when Samuel said, "No, I got you because you one of them, so you can go talk to them." You know, so if you're going to have 12, a jury with no African Americans, you need, maybe we need somebody that can at least talk to them in their language, because had that charge of manslaughter not been in the charge, he would have walked on the murder.
You know what?
Leon.
Yes, sir.
I do totally, completely respect everything that you're putting out there in the legal realm of legal philosophy and everything. And I've got a history with the system here personally by myself, and I am not by no means trying to compare it to what we're dealing with on this level. But this thing is, I have relatives that are attorneys, and I completely understand. I'm an outsider from the field of being of jurisprudence on a practical level, but on an intellectual level, I can come at you straight and honest. And I mean, I'm not trying to expose nobody, and but this issue is that I've seen panelists, I've seen Kobe Warren. And I love you guys.
Mm-hmm.
I do understand. I do completely empathize, but I'm tired. It's not just you. I'm not talking about black attorneys. But white attorneys, the state bar, the judiciary commission, and everything like that. Okay, I'm somewhere in between what Malik is talking about and what you're talking about, but. The fact of the matter is, tell the people the truth. That's all. What is justice? I swear to tell the whole. I swear to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth. So help me God. Whether you're Christian, Muslim, or Mormon, or whatever, the thing is, the language of the, and this is, it's not your fault. This is the people's fault. This is the electorate's fault, because what people need to be told by attorneys is, hey. Read this law. Come and consult with me. Don't tell me what to do, you know, because I'm the practical person. But You need to get intellectual with the law, because the law in the penal code, the law in the Constitution, the law in every statutory sense is plain meaning of English language. It's not complex. Murder is the only crime under the law that was applicable under the facet law in this trial. And the appeal, okay, now you can see, we can anticipate and we can hypothesize what's going to go on at the appeal level, but the state did not put on any elements of recklessness. We're in a sandwich here. I feel from my intellectual understanding of the law, the technical understanding of the law, the plain language English meaning is, okay, when you pull any other crime that you've ever seen in the case law, when you use a firearm to commit the judge, I mean, it's just scatterbraining me, because I'm not seeing what this whole trial has shown is that the defense and the state have both been dodging and weaving on the fact that law. They've been playing semantics and nuance for some underworld agenda, and I'm tired of it.
Let me just briefly touch on a couple of things. The state's whole case involved recklessness, that it was reckless of him not to knock, that it was reckless of them to go snooping around, that it was reckless of them of him to fire into a dark room where he didn't know who all was in there. It could have been four or five kids in there. The legal question becomes, because as attorneys, and we stated this, you know, very clearly when we were debriefing, you know, like, okay, how do we have an intentional killing, okay, and recklessness at the same time? So the question, because the attorneys are like, anytime a police officer discharges his or her weapon, the intent is to kill, okay? Don't be confused about that. If they fire, they're firing to kill. They'll try to make it sound pretty by eliminating the threat. But if they shoot that weapon, their intent is to kill. So we were thinking, okay, well, what would be an example? If I'm on a call and I see a dark room and I can't see exactly what's in that room, but I see a dark figure come running towards me and I shoot and an 8-year-old kid falls at my feet, okay, did I intentionally kill that person? Yes. Was it reckless of me not to identify who that was before I shot? Yes. And so the question becomes, is the act of the killing itself, okay, what the jury considered reckless, or did the jury consider their entire conduct that night reckless? What was that? Bad policing. And this was bad policing. What was that? Bad policing. What was that? So I disagree respectfully that there was no evidence that a reckless act occurred. The question becomes whether the killing must be reckless or whether the entirety of the circumstances were reckless, and whether a court will look at that. And so that's where we now, and then Malik and I are on the same page. You want to change stuff, you got to start handling the grown folks out of it, which is voting and putting candidates in who have similar or like minds. You know, that's as much a part of the game as the protest. So when you protest, and I encourage people to whatever you can, if you got to save up your coins, if you ever get to Atlanta again, go to the National Civil Rights Museum. Go and sit and see how methodically they planned everything they did. They had the lawyers. They had training. Before they went and had a sit-in at a counter at an all-white restaurant, if you couldn't make it out the high school gym where they were having practice and other black folk were pouring stuff on you and calling you out your name, if they got you mad, you couldn't go. And so, and then they always had a specific agenda involved with any protest. At the end of this, we're looking for A, B, and C. And they were unified in doing so. And we have people who are protesting just to be seen on social media a lot of times. You ask them what they want, justice. Okay, well, what is that? Wow. What do you mean? Wow. You know, and so I encourage folks to continue to be involved. If you got a voice, if you're the kind that doesn't mind getting out, yelling, keep doing it. But take your game to the next level. Don't stay at the same level. Start getting your protest to the point where you're actually speaking the language of city officials, and that's either at the ballot box or economically.
Wow. Y'all, let's talk about what they said. Profound, by the way, Lynn. What they said as far as what the state said in closing. And I love Dale Smith's portion of it. He said, probation, you said you would consider it, but you didn't promise it. He said 15 minutes a week, 3 hours a year is what probation is. He said that's what he will get. When Aaron Dean took the stand, did he seem like a man that punished himself or one that had given himself a pass for what he did? He said, is it an isolated incident because other officers don't act like him? Every time he had a chance to save a Tatiana's life, he didn't. He said, Aaron Dean is a hard charger. Every step he made toward the backyard is who he is. It's because of him you're sitting in those seats. What is a Tatiana's life worth? What will you tell her family? She will never be married, be a doctor, or grow old. Her mother outlived her. It's because of Aaron Dean's decisions a Tatiana is not here. What are you going to say to Tatiana's family and this community? Her family didn't ask for this. What is her life worth? Tatiana Jefferson is the only one who lost her life, a woman who went to college and wanted to be a doctor. He had so many opportunities to make things different, and he didn't. Direct things back to Aaron Dean, not his family. Dr. Kyle Clayton was spot on about his assessment of Aaron Dean. As Tatiana was taking her last breath, Dean stood over her and did nothing. Tatiana deserved better. She deserves a sentence from you. Take action. Give him the maximum. Give him 20 years. That was Dale's closing. I loved it.
The man said she sounded like a dog while she was moaning, taking her last breath.
Yeah.
That is not a repentant person. That is not the thing that a Christian man would say, that she was moaning like a dog.
Right.
I thought it was the dog.
Yep.
You know, that is not a contrite person. Go ahead.
I mean, you know, Leon, I'm different because I think I got a better grasp of the non-indigenous people because, you know, my grassroots come from Highland Hills, Edge Cliff Village. So coming up through the 80s, I get his mind of being that type of white person. And he meant what he said with no discretion.
Mm-hmm.
That's the way they view us. When you have that no form of remorse or empathy, and you play these BS tactical games by shining the light. See, my perception is different because I was there day one. Me and my comrades went in the backyard because we trained tactically. We understand projections. We understand what actually went on. And that dude is who he is. He admitted to who he is. This is why I'm feeling like, how is it that this man has showed you all his spades in his hand, showed you all his cards, and it take this long to come up with a conclusion? That really ratchets my spirit, man. That really ratchets my spirit. And you recall what Mr. Dean said, that they didn't find no glass fragments on the sister.
On her hand.
She wasn't that close to that window. You dig what I'm saying?
No, he didn't
that's
say that.
Physical
no,
evidence of perjury.
Say it correctly.
Yeah, thank you, brother. You said the key word. the perjury.
That's physical evidence of perjury.
Whoever said that.
No, but he said he didn't find any glass fragments on her hand. It was, I think it was in her face,
right,
but not on her hand. So he was saying
right,
that the hands were not where they said they were.
Right, because her hands were not up and the weapon was not projected outward. So there was
no glass stripling
found on her hands. Also, I would have said it flat out. He lied. He never saw
a gun. Thank you, brother.
That's why he never yelled gun. That's why he didn't dive to the side. That's why he went and looked in the window. No fool goes and looks in the window if somebody in there with a gun just shot at you. You ain't going to go hold your head up and looking in the window. And so that's why when his partner said, hey, we got to get in there, that he never said, hey, slow down, I saw a gun. That's why he never tried to slow her down. And when he got into the room, he was so busy trying to find something that could freaking save his skin that when he did see a gun, what he said was, and you can go back and listen to it, while he was on the stand and she was moaning like a dog, you hear him say, looks like we have a weapon here. He didn't say, here's the gun. He didn't say, he said, here's a gun, not here's the gun. Like, got the weapon. No, it was like, looks like we have a weapon here. That means he didn't even know. And he never said anything about a laser coming out and hitting his chest. You understand? There's no laser on the body cam because when she was shot, this is my conjecture, and that weapon fell from her hand, the activation button is on the side. And when that weapon fell from her hand, it activated. But those buttons are sensitive for your trigger finger. When you have your finger along the side, you can tap it easily and cut the laser on and off. So it was stuck on, because we had a hard time cutting it off because when it hit the ground and it got cut on, the button got stuck because it hit the ground harder than it was meant to. You know, and so I would have flat out called him a liar. He didn't see a weapon
at all. Look at the trajectory, too. What the laser supposed to do, curve around and hit Dean? Because Dean was standing on the side of the air conditioner, brother. I was back there. If he was square on, he would have...
Right now,
he
would have come under the Brotherhood of Truth.
At a different point, bro. I understand.
Come under the Brotherhood of Truth.
And if that laser can curve around, it's a new trick for me. And I'm still skeptical. I still think Doris was lying about her camera, because certain positions... That 180, that camera mount is. Every officer I talk to say that camera mount, they are instructed to mount that camera same place I mount mine. It's in the middle of your body on it, like everybody else do. And I got
unity.
And I'm still skeptical of this 180 camera. That's a 180 with projection. You can't see yourself, brother. That's a lie.
Can I make an observation?
That is a total. I ain't buying that. It's a lot of holes in that story, but just like Leon said, he just flat out lied. That's just all in a nutshell. The man lied, and he needs to be held point blank.
I got a quick observation. I think with Dortch as well. I think Dortch, if you all go back and listen to the initial body camera, I'm telling you all, Dortch did not want to go in that backyard. Whatever she whispered to that dude, he disregarded. Cause she whispered something to him. But you know he was doing his own thing. But I'm gonna say this, y'all. Quick observation. In Dorothy Campbell, she did have a camera that night. She's a woman. She's working after hours. Why would she be out in the middle? No, you know, out doing her thing without her body camera. Check this out, y'all. Quick observation. Anytime a law enforcement encounters a threat. We know this not pertains to Ms. Tatiana because she was no threat. Anytime law enforcement perceives a threat with a gun, first thing they have to do is try to neutralize it, right?
Right.
So had he went in that house, had a Tatiana, because the lady was still alive. First thing you got to do is you got to neutralize that threat. Not say finish the threat. This is not a Tatiana. I'm just thinking about how law enforcement is, how they operate. She was still alive. If she had a gun, first thing you want to go in there and do is identify yourself. Police, Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. Hands, hands, hands. Regardless of what this person is dealing with right now, this person is still alive. Regardless of what they're dealing with, hands. Let me see your hands. Let me see your hands. So if you all, if none of that have occurred through that on that audio, it lets you know. Old boy was doing his own thing. Miss Jefferson, and him not rendering aid. That was intent. Now that's intent. Y'all want to talk about intent? I intended not to render this woman aid. I intended to look for a so-called weapon before XYZ. I intended to shine my light, you know, like you all, like y'all stated how to draw out whoever this is. I intended. So there was some intention, a lot of intention going on with the recklessness, but we've all seen law enforcement. They don't never let nobody, if they shoot somebody with a gun and that person is still, what they telling them? Hey, they steady giving commands. They steady trying to, and they'll go kick the gun, whatever they got to do. They don't even put handcuffs on people they don't shot. We've seen that. They have put handcuffs on individuals they have shot before they render aid. I'm going to mute my phone, Carrie.
Here's another hypothetical, and I'm not trying to freaking incense nothing, but another hypothetical technicality of the law that we need to understand is that, let me ask everybody, if we would have been dealing with Zion as the victim instead of a Tatiana, then by the technicality of law, that indictment would have been a capital murder charge.
So it would have.
Right.
And I'm just wondering, how are you going to get from capital murder to manslaughter?
That's a good question.
Under 10 years old, under the same factual circumstances, that is capital murder.
Yep.
Y'all, let me tell y'all what I came up with. Tell me if this makes sense. You know, I'm a deep thinker, y'all. So this is what I came up with. Aaron Dean said, put up your hands, show me your hands. So that implies he never saw her hands, and he testified to the same. Also, Aaron Dean never said drop the gun, which means he never saw a gun. And we also know that Officer Darch testified she never saw a gun. And then after the shooting, remember, Aaron Dean never told his partner that he'd seen a gun. So that says to me that if Carol Darch didn't see a gun and Dean didn't see any hands, and Zion didn't see a Tatiana point the gun out the window, it never happened. That's something.
Well, you understand. Yeah. They first initiative as a law. They ain't conditioned to tell the truth. Let's quit bull-jiving ourselves. They conditioned to tell a hot-ass lie.
Right.
They taught that. And so those are the type of department all through America. You know, they have done since, you know, before anybody on the phone was born, they've been doing this type of stuff for quite some time. And it becomes part of their culture, you know.
I worked in law enforcement a brief time. One of the first things all the officers around me taught me was you got to learn what CYA means. And I said to the first person who said that to me, well, what is CYA? And that term, for anybody who has not heard it, is cover your ass. So anytime you mess up, you got to know how to cover your ass. And so I have no doubt that somebody helped Dean cover his ass that night. That's all I'm going to say about that.
It's about the department.
Mm-hmm.
It's all about the department. It ain't about morals or wrong. And I wish I quit thinking these individuals are Rhodes Scholars from the University of Harvard. Where do these people come from? I know where they come from.
I'm going to back you up, Malik. You got to understand one thing about this term that they call probable cause in the legal context. That probable cause ain't for attorneys. Attorneys are intellectual enough to understand that. what they throw this terminology of probable cause and reasonable suspicion, that's a fucking crutch for cops.
Oh, yeah, most deaf. Most deaf.
Okay, let's do this, because since we're in the sentencing phase, we want to be very clear, and we hope that the prosecution and the judge and everybody else is listening, but, you know, who knows. As far as probation, Leon, let's talk about that. 15 minutes a week, 3 hours a year. Is that sufficient? I mean, it was that a ridiculous thing to even put on the table for the defense?
Well, as
it's not ridiculous, it's statutorily required. You would not make a jury if you could not, again, any time a potential juror cannot avail himself or herself to the full range of punishment, you are automatically disqualified from the jury. That means there must be some circumstance under which you could give this, you know, guy who raped a 3-year-old the minimum sentence.
Mm-hmm.
You understand? And some people are like, oh, hell no. You rape a 3-year-old, you going for life. Okay, sir, have a nice day. You're not going to make the jury. And the state legislature has stated that manslaughter is the type of case where you can get probation. And if any juror is not open to that on the front end, like, yeah, I'll listen. There could be something that, you know, okay, that I could see, you know, giving probation for, you know. But, again, as Dale said, that doesn't mean you have to. And so, of course, the defense is going to go for, you know, probation. Oh, he's a cop, good Christian man, never been in trouble. Whoops, yes, he has. You know, so he's remorseful. Oops, no, he ain't. You understand? And so, you know, the state wants to point out, and again, this is all ironic because as a defense attorney, you know, I understand what they're arguing, but all the defense attorneys, the black ones, are pulling for the state. And so, you know, and the state is not used to prosecuting cops. You know, so now they are arguing, you know, probation for this guy, you know, ain't the thing. And probation officers has 140 people per probationer, and they only meet once every so often. And so, yeah, they're breaking it down. So sometimes he's breaking it down like I break down time. If I'm a defense attorney, one of my well-practiced closing arguments when I got a guy that I'm trying to get a short sentence, okay, is I have to make people aware of time, because too often juries think in fives, 5, 10, 15, 20. Oh, no, folks. In between each one of those 5, 10, 15, 20s is a 365. So before you go from 2 years to 3 years, somebody, anybody, count to 365 and then say two or three. Then somebody count from three to 365 again. Count as fast as you can. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13. And then say four. And then say five. And then, but you know what? You won't do it because it'll take too long. You understand? You know, so you have to, you think 10 seconds isn't a long time? Put your hand in some boiling hot water for 10 seconds and then tell me 10 seconds isn't a long time. Mm-hmm. You understand? And so there are tactics that you can use to relate stuff and break it down to people so that they go, never thought of it that way. And so that's what the state tried to do today with probation, is break it down and say this is going to be too easy for this guy. And that's why he broke it down the way he did, Carrie.
I agree.
Leon, let me ask Leon a question, Carrie. Leon, okay. I was reading like 2 days ago, and it's confusing me, and I don't understand it. I mean, it's not nobody's fault, but it's something that I got a question about. The difference between, in under these same circumstances, the difference between a judge election in determining the sentence and a jury election in determining the sentence, if you read the code, the code of criminal procedure, the judge, if they had elected a judge to determine the sentence, then he would not be eligible under any circumstances for the probation, because there was a under the code of criminal procedure, under the judge election, they're restricted, because there would have been an order that declared the use of a firearm in the commission of a felony, and it's off the table. Probation is off the table. But then they select a jury election, and then it's wide open.
Did you understand the question?
They don't have that same requisite.
Was that a question or a statement?
Well,
I was just kind of asking him what's the rationale for that.
Okay. Generally, mm-hmm. One, everything that they follow comes from Austin. That's where your state reps come into play. So, again, that goes back to getting state reps and electing state reps that are of the same like mine. Now, generally speaking, it's the judge who can give probation when the jury cannot.
Right.
So, but understand that right now, this is the reason why, as a defense attorney, we generally tell our clients, go with the jury, because all 12 of those people have to agree on the punishment. And and by the fact that at the end of today, that they're only playing with 1 through 20, y'all. They ain't dealing with 21 through 99 or life. They don't have to worry about the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 30s. They're only back there arguing between 1 and 20 and probation. And so for me as a defense attorney, I'm like, this ain't, I'm not feeling this. You know, and so that's a little bit of a concern for me.
Okay. You can't have a computer and a cell phone at the same time. You'll get an echo.
But when you go to the judge, remember, a judge gets elected. And how often do you see that when judges run, what do they always say they're going to be? Tough on crime. Y'all know the point. So that's why you usually will say, give me the jury. One, because if you go to the judge could slam you.
Right.
You know, because they want to appear tough on crime. You know, and they got to be subject to reelection, and you know, you can pretty much bet that their opponent is going to say, he gave so-and-so no time at all, and that person was back on the so judges will tend to give more time than juries, because with juries, you got 12 different people with 12 different life experiences, and time matters to those 12 different people, and so they're back there still arguing tonight.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the 20 that's on the table. I think most people that look like me feel like that's fair. But fair and realistic, are they the same thing in this situation?
That's just too hard to say. No, a jury is its own animal.
Yep.
This jury said no to murder, yes to manslaughter. Another jury could say yes to murder, you know, and another jury could say he going home. Juries are their own animals. You can't predict what they're going to do, you know. So when it comes to this point, even the attorneys and the judge, everybody just sitting back waiting.
Really, just like Kobe said, you really ain't nothing the judge can do. You really have to at the mercy of the jury right now.
And you can't look in on what they're doing. You know, you got what they do back there is their business.
Right.
Well, that being sequestered, so how late do you think they're working? Are they shutting off at 5? Are they working into the night,
no.
or what do you think?
They stop.
No.
They stop at 5. When they go home, they're done.
Oh, I didn't know that.
You can't go. They can't. They, you know, they get to fellowship at lunch, but they can't talk about the case at lunch.
Oh.
All deliberations take place in the jury room. They don't have a little conference room. They can't go in there and play spades with each other. And talk about and chop up the case. Oh, no. When they go to their rooms, you know, they're by themselves. And at this point, the rooms, the TVs don't have any power cords. They don't have their cell phones. If a family emergency comes up, they have the number to the bailiff that's in charge of them. They call that bailiff, and that bailiff deals with it from there. But right now, they're alone with their thoughts in a book, you know, or a tablet with a preloaded movie or something, you know. But you're not gonna have access to the media.
I'm gonna say this, y'all, and I've been around this area longer than I want to admit. I'm gonna say since about 85, 86. That's it. I ain't never seen this in history. And when I say I haven't seen this in history, I haven't seen this energy where people decided that we're going to force a change. And I think people don't know the power of their ability to get change. And I hope y'all can read between the lines. And so I saw a shift, and I feel shifts real easy, y'all, unlike other folks. I really felt a shift this week, that things had shifted. And it was as though the powers that be realize that the people are going to stand up if this thing don't turn out right. And
that's,
I think that's
the point, Terry. That's the point that I will sit there and make. This Aaron Dean thing is strike three. This is strike three for Tarrant County, because we had Courtney Johnson, John Romer, narcissistic, the same script, the same lawyers, the same script, the same judges, the same DA. We got, this is going to be strike three. Strike three, you're out. Right? That's what I feel. Because that's what we're getting here with this pro. This is the same script that we got. Courtney Johnson off on a mistrial and a dismissal, and a lot of back channel bullshit got him dismissed. Then you got John Romer got knocked off upstairs. We don't know. That ain't nobody tracking that. People need to stop letting things fall off the radar, man. All of these dots are connected. And like Leon said, voting, and whatever that is, but whatever. We got to take care of business. We got to stop eating this stale-ass cake of injustice.
Well, see, thing of it is, now, you know what it is? They think we too friendly. See, we didn't got too friendly with them. You go to their little...
I agree.
You go down to their little bourgeois, kiki ha with your white buddies, and you think it's all right. Because you're a little next dope to them. And you really don't know them. Like I knew them.
All three of those cops, Romer, Courtney, and Dean, they call them golf buddies.
I listen to you, brother. Please.
Yeah.
And the thing of it is, it's really the state of the whole city, man. That's what's on the fence, the state of the whole city. And if you think one inkling, stinkling minute that we gonna, them young folks gonna take to the streets and be friendly and just holler no justice, no peace, I'm gonna elude you to when they came down on Miller Street, brother. And yeah, they Fort Worth never thought they ever see that. And that same overtone could be like this, could create a situation if they don't get this thing right. And I don't want to see it, because I've looked at these young folks, and a lot has changed with these young folks in 3 years. I know.
I already agree with you, and I'm tired of this hype of people trying to freaking conjecture this BLM thing. BLM is a broad spectrum, man. That's a broad spectrum of dissidents, you know. What people don't understand, I am Fort Worth. I'm born in Fort Worth. Fort Worth is in my blood. What people don't understand about about Fort Worth is it's a different beast, man. All right? And Fort Worth, when it comes out, it's going to put a whole new brand on the situation. Antifa, that ain't people talking about Antifa and that Manuel Mata thing. That's just fluff. What Fort Worth is,
Let me jump in right quick. Okay, first of all, listen, y'all, I have been so consumed with this trial that I didn't even realize what was going on with Trump until I talked to a family member today. And I didn't even realize how serious that thing is taking off. Well, that said, realize that one of the things that Trump said about Tarrant County, it is one of the he don't want to call it racist. I want to say what he said. One of the reddest counties in the country. So that means, okay, let me finish. I'm sorry. Is that not what he said?
Yeah, that's what he said.
Okay, so I called it racist, but he said reddest. Okay, so one of the reddest counties in the country. Okay, so that means there's probably a lot of insurrectionist kind of people or thinking kind of people here. Okay, and then we got this Aaron Dean thing brewing over here. And so I, you know, with my deep thinking self thought today, you know, if they're talking civil war, it could very well start right here. I mean, do y'all realize the seriousness of what all we got going on in the country and right here in Fort Worth at the very same time? That's
and that's what I say. That's
in
what
reality,
I say
if you me. Think we skinned, you're a goddamn lie.
I ain't saying nobody skinned, but I'm just saying,
if they think it like this, I don't care what they think. But I guarantee you, we ready for whatever occasion they want to come up with. We didn't prove that.
But are we ready? You know what I'm saying? Because you know, you listen. I don't want the Civil War to start in my backyard, and so and I don't think a lot of people do. But I think we got to realize that this is serious because there's a lot of Trumpsters that they're very like narrow minded, and I'm being polite in their thinking, and so they don't mind setting the whole thing on fire if that's what it takes to get their point across. And so do we really want that and the Aaron Dean thing brewing at the exact same time? Because we're living here. You know,
that's like telling you about Fort Worth. I think Fort Worth is a unit in itself, whether it be the dynamics that are going on in Fort Worth, the black community and the white community. It's not like some of these outlying counties, Parker County and all of this, where you see the Trump flags everywhere. People in Fort Worth, it's a historically, right? I mean, they're fixing to build the Juneteenth. I mean, Fort Worth is a different than Dallas, you know? I mean, historically, there's a lot more going on in Fort Worth than there is Dallas. I'm not trying to start no beef, but it is.
No. And you know what? And let me be clear for anybody who could take what I said and misconstrue it. That's not what I'm saying. I think the last thing we want in Tarrant County is a civil war to start here. And so my point is to be cognizant of what's going on in this country and aware of the fact that we got two things brewing in our backyard. Would you agree with that, Leon? Leon, is that quiet? Leon, don't get quiet now.
Ain't just started with Trump. That's been going on since Obama. I mean, Carrie. Hold on, sister. This is what I do. This is what we trained to do. Mm-hmm. This been going on since Obama with this back and forth with this Civil War thing. It ain't got nothing to do with Donald Trump. It's been brewing.
Mm-hmm.
Trump just maybe put it a little bit more to the forefront and heighten and put some drama to it. But at the end at the end of the day, don't nobody want no bloodshed.
But my point is,
and I have faith.
Let me finish my thought. Let me finish where I was going there because I do not want to get off with this. Listen, what I'm saying is be cognizant of what you say, because what you say could set the next person off. So make sure when you say what you're saying in the grocery store, at the gas station, you know, taking your kids to school, that you are aware of the climate that we're in right now. There's been a shift. There's a whole lot of sensitivity, and a lot of people are on edge. You know, we got COVID. We got financial problems. We got, you know, what's going on with Trump. We got what's going on with his trial. It's a whole lot of stuff. It's Christmas time. People are depressed. So my point is, you know, be a little nicer, you know, because you just don't know what the other person is on. And so because I don't know how you're moving, I'm going to be a little nicer when I'm in the streets with you because I don't want no trouble. And so I'm just saying pay attention. Would you agree with that, Leon?
Well, maybe the fact that it is Christmas time, you know, who knows? You know, it's the, you know, generally people always want to pay it forward and do nice acts and kind acts, you know, between Christmas, New Year's, and there's always some sense of hope going into a new year. But, Tarrant County is a hotbed for Tea Party people, and Tea Party people are really the folk who really started all of this stuff, in my opinion, when Glenn Beck and all of those folk were pushing Tea Party, and that's where really the divisiveness, really, in my opinion, started. But, it never hurts to be nice, you know. And so you always hope for the best when it comes to human beings, but people say prepare for the worst. So you want to come at Leon. Leon is not going to be an easy target, you know.
And that's the only thing I'm saying, Kerry. You know, all that old friendly fear talk, I'm sorry. That ain't in me. James didn't raise up like that. I mean, that's what I'm hearing, being extra nice to white folks. That's what you're saying.
No. What I'm saying is, listen, now listen, y'all.
What you're saying.
No,
the first thing you alluded to is this Trump thing.
No. Listen, anybody who knows
me. That's what you said, sister.
No, I'm just saying.
I live around a whole bunch of Trump.
Let me clarify. Kerry ain't no punk. I mean, seriously, I don't start a fight, but I don't back down from one. So I'm not that person at all. And so what I was saying is just be aware of your surroundings. You know what I'm saying? So sometimes we can go get ourselves in situations and we don't even understand because we're not aware of where we are and who's around us. And so... Yeah, read between the lines, y'all.
I don't get that over to him because I live right around him.
Well, I'm just saying. And listen, Mr. Gillis, you are giving me hell over there in the chat. I don't know what I'm doing, sir. I'm not aware of what you're referring to. I'm looking for his number out here. He says I'm over here. I don't understand what he says. He says this is some disrespectful shit you pulling this on. With them whole ass slaves. Who are we talking about, Mr. Gillis? Are you listening to my show?
That's what he's saying. That sounds like. I don't know. You need to clarify that, though.
Wait. I'm looking for your number. What? I want to come to you so you can tell me, because listen, that ain't Let's Talk for Work. I'm looking for you. I'm going to open your phone line. I'm bold enough to do it.
Some little funny dudes you got up there, and you know I was trying to speak on the line, but you cut me off. So that's all about.
I asked you, Mr. Gillis, I asked you, did you want to speak, and you said you wanted to listen, so I muted you.
And then I don't even want to play with that little dude anyway, because, no, hold on, let me make this clear. I asked you many times, I want to eject on some cuz I already know that guy Leon know who I am. And he might not know in depth who I am. He will get to meet me one day. Because I know he tried to refer to me at one of the protests. Let me tell you something. I don't even know how to
Wait, 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 wait. No. Let's be fair. If you're going to say Leon knows you, tell him how he knows you.
And you trying to get real sideways on the cool. He know who I am before I came on. That's why he made that statement he made, because both all y'all down to people downtown listen to y'all. You know what I'm saying? So I just try to inject that I don't know a high-profile case ever here in America with a black man that killed a white woman, raped a white woman, then it went a bunch of white folks out there in front of the courthouse. You know what I'm saying? So that don't give you no ground to file for no appeal, and it don't. Even the Moody case. Now, Father, what went on in the courtroom, I can't speak on that part, you know what I'm saying? But that's very misleading, you know what I'm saying? The reason why you got all white jury is because the attorney was gagged up, the family was gagged up, and the pressure couldn't be on. I've been on this case from day one. Like that brother right there talking, he know me. He might not know me by name, But you
yeah,
know,
I know
but
you,
Mr. Gillis. My car,
I know you, brother.
You know,
I know you. I'm very familiar.
I was right there, and I seen the window. I'm the guy that's supposed to fix the window in the first place. So I'm just saying, when I come on this show right here, I don't know what this show really be all about, man, because all the facts are right there for the jury. You know what I'm saying? I've been sentenced by all white jury before, too. They ain't never did nothing about a cop and got shot by a cop. And society don't know nothing about it right today other than hospital records. So I'm just trying to say I don't understand. A lot of people don't like me. They done told some about me to stay away from me because I'm down with this right now. But I really ride with Houston, Texas. You know, I help brothers get off death row. I done help over 40 brothers get out of prison because that's what I do with my pen and my paper. So I don't know. I ain't never heard of you kicking up no dust in the courtroom, Mr. Leon. I know you might practice law, but, you know, I don't hear none of that real freedom fighter in you, though. You know what I'm saying? So, but what I do hear, just like I hear from this man coming over here from Dallas, Mr. Russell Williams, you know, I hear a lot of those Tom watered-down stuff all the time. You know what I'm saying? And everybody know this case is a big old conspiracy. Indeed, hold on, I'm going to let y'all have it. In need of this trial, I would like to see a mistrial where they get a whole other jury. I think it's a murder.
You
I think it's a ground for the feds to come in. Because anybody, he goes to the penitentiary.
Why would we pay for a whole other trial when you give him 20 years and go on down the road?
Well, you and I know he ain't going to get no 20 years. And if he do get 20 years, that's just a pat on the back, man, because, you know, I've been to prison, man. He ain't going to do no be a ward boy. And when he drive up in the penitentiary, he's going to have it better than any prison ever was, and all the white supremacists are going to flock to him, you know. So that's what goes on in prison, you know. So he need a live sentence. That's why I recommend a live sentence. If a lot of people really knew anything about prison, that's what he would be when he drive up. You know, he's going to be the one that comes on the form and everybody send him everything, cell phone and everything. You know, that's what's going to happen. But I'm sorry, I'm going to let y'all have it now, because, you know, I'm really one of the brothers to the left, man. I don't even really blown on nothing like this right here. You know?
Okay.
I got the FBI right out here in front of my house. I got Homeland Security stalking me. I don't have a problem with none of that, because this how far I'm down with it. I'm knee-deep in what I do. You know what I'm saying? So I'm just not a protester. I'm a brother that fight for people of freedom. That's why I do what I do. That's why I stand on my own platform, because I don't want to be a part of that with people watering that down. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I don't have time for that.
Mr. Gillis, with all due respect, I ain't new to this. I'm true to this. I've been doing the show since 2010. I don't water anything down. So obviously you need to listen a little longer to get familiar with the show, because that's not what we do over here. Okay.
No, Mr. Gill,
so
in reference to Sister Carrie, Mr. Gill, you know, I know you're probably not quite familiar. She really give us more reign than any platform that I've been on. You know what I'm saying? A lot of platforms don't even let us call in and express ourselves. Right, wrong, or indifferent. Carrie runs a platform to where she lets us agree to disagree. You know what I'm saying, bro? She real on that aspect. She don't try to choke nobody out. Because a lot of times, you know, even when I file sometimes, you know what I'm saying, she don't mind reeling me back in, anybody back in, when it comes to but we all need that, bro. But now she'll let you speak your piece, man. And rest of these cats, you be having to type in, and they pick and choose what questions they want you or what people. So we got, you know, them gatekeepers platforms. But this is one I feel very comfortable with, because she allows us to express ourselves without choking us out.
Okay. So, Mr. Gillis, I hope that gave you a little insight into what we do over here. But next time, don't be such a name caller before you sit around and listen a little bit. Because
yeah,
you got to be wrong.
I'm going to give it to you wrong when I think you're trying to handle them, because you cut me off. That's what you did. You cut me off. You know,
sir,
then
when I open your phone line, Mr. Gillis, now listen. When I open your phone line, you said, sir, you just wanted to listen. So I muted you. That's what I typically do when someone says they want to just listen. And remember, you got a whole bunch of folks that's listening, and they heard you say it. So I muted you. I said, I'm going to mute
you.
You're right.
You're right now. I wanted to say something, because Hold on. I want to say something because he said something about the protesters, and I'm like, you know, that ain't going to fly with me because, you know, I understand the white man and everybody else telling these lawyers there should not be no protesters out there. That's why you got an all-white Jew in the first place, because had they been out there and the pressure would have been on, it would never have been that from the beginning, you know?
I understand your point, Mr. Gillis. I understand, and I stand with you on that, brother, 110%. But like I say, you know, unfortunately, we live in a town full of gatekeepers. And when the slave masters chunk the bag over their fence, like I said, these are unclassified meetings that they go in behind these closed doors and don't come back and tell us what's going on. Kerry is not part of that group. And we are not part of that group. We have called them out several times about going having these classified meetings. Unclassified means don't come back and tell us nothing. Some platforms, we can't even go on. I'm a U94 working one.
I like what she's doing, but that don't mean, man, her would never have a disagreement. I mean,
I'm just saying we can agree to disagree.
But I don't want nobody to think even some of the people, like, did you go downtown? I said, I don't have no business downtown because I'm not down there. That ain't what I do, just console the family. But, you know, I'm a soldier, and I'm going to go down what I want to do, you know. And I'm putting some youngsters on my team, man. If they want to do what they want to do, that's what they going to do. But then I'm not going to never stand with a coward black man. I'm not, and I never have stand with a coward black
not
man. Because
No. Mr. Gillis, thank you for chiming in tonight. But what we're not going to do is put that in the atmosphere on this show, because I ain't inciting nothing, and I'm not going to be in agreement for anybody saying that we're going to be okay with young folks doing anything, Mr. Gillis. Because one thing you got to know is God. If you're going to say that God is for us, then we got to trust that God got this. And we ain't going to do nothing else.
Keep out of me what you thought I said, man.
No, that ain't what he was saying. What he was saying, Kerry said. He said whatever them young folks going to do, they going to do. That's what he was saying. That's what he was alluding to. He has no control of what young people going
to
do. That's what
you
know, Mr. Gillis was saying. I didn't say that. My dog's on sale.
Listen to this, y'all. We saw what happened with Mata in the courtroom. Let's just go there. We saw what happened with Mata in the courtroom. Let me finish. And we heard those people today, the judge and Mr. Brissett, get up there and say Mata's record had a record of assault, and he had a record of basically interfering with police officers in their official duties. That said, they went on to say, oh, he had a whole bunch of layers of clothes on. We don't know if he had, you know, weapons, so we were afraid for the family. We were afraid for Mr. D. So my point is, we don't want anybody to take anything we say and twist it like what we saw in court today. And so what I'm trying to do is be very clear in everything we say here, so nobody can say Let's Talk for a Worse spearheaded anything, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, because they will do that. And Kerry, you're 110% right. Because they will do that.
On the manual model issue, everything you heard out of Brissett today, and I'm not confirming or denying because I don't have firsthand knowledge. He don't have no firsthand knowledge. Everything he said in that BS little antics that he did, that was all ambiguous and unfounded, okay?
You ain't lying.
But it showed you how to spin bullshit, though. I mean, so, yeah, excuse
well,
me.
Well, the thing of it is, Gallagher should have told Brissett to sit down and shut up.
When he pointed
out Manuel, and that's what should have been told to Brissett.
But to pay attention how they carefully weave that thing together, and they made Manuel, for anybody who doesn't know Manuel, out to be a really bad guy. If you don't know him, you would be scared of Manuel Mata, the person that they portrayed him to be in court today. So my point is, I am very careful, and we just talked about a few minutes ago, careful about what you say. Because obviously people tend to take what you say and twist it, edit it, and then they take it before the judge in this particular situation. And the next thing you know, you are either in contempt of court or being sworn in.
I was out there with Manuel. If you went out there with Manuel, I seen the man, and the man and the dudes did squarely flip.
Big guy, because they thought he was white, man. He had
quick observation.
No, I'm right there watching. He never ran up on that family. I hear them hollering.
I know. I said, Mr. Gill, me and you was out there. That's what I'm saying, Mr. Gill. I'm not totally
he never ran up on that family where it could be interpreted as a threat.
Right.
He never uttered the threat word.
Quick observation.
Yeah, I mean, I understand, but this is what I'm trying to say. I understand people with those type of minds going to do what they want to do. Because, you know, they've been lying for years and misconstruing stuff. They misinterpret everything we do as a threat. But that's why I want to trip out with you, Ms. Anna. I've never come on this show or anybody's show, and I'm not a threat to these people. I got these people following me every day. They follow me because they know what I do. You see what I'm saying?
Hey, I got one piece of legal analysis, and I'm going to be through communism. I want to say something that traditionally, conventionally, and just about in every single case, there's something that you can interpret from, you can read from a defense, when you read the defense, okay? If the defense is not confident in their fucking position with the jury, then at least once, probably three times during the proceeding guilt, innocence, and punishment phase, the defense is going to come up and declaratively motion for a mistrial, just as a formality. You didn't see that today. You did not see that throughout this whole trial. They kind of teetered with it. That's what that whole Magna Carta thing was.
No, sir. He didn't ask for a mistrial. He did it.
He did
a couple of days ago. Hold on. Quick observation, Chris. Quick observation. He did it a couple of days ago, and the judge shot it down. He said, based on XYZ, he tried it.
That was
after
directed
the last shot,
verdict. That was directed verdict.
He was still trying to get directed verdict. No, sir. He was
mistrial.
Trying to get. Sir,
they're trying to get a mistrial, Adrian. They're trying to get a mistrial.
I'm not
Can we?
I got a quick observation. Quick observation.
Okay, what's the observation?
And Carrie, I need to ask the guest a question. The defense was playing off the judge's energy. He realized how the judge was moving. He started using that to his advantage. Basically, using that to his advantage. If the judge is going to call people to the...
Well, he know Gallagher a cop level. He know Gallagher is a cop level. They knew that.
So how Gallagher was calling people calling people out. I got this. I'm gonna use this to my advantage. Let me know what you got, Carrie.
Okay, Ms. Church, Tamara Church, are you still there?
I'm still here.
Adrian, I'm sorry, it took so long to get back to you. Adrian, your question for her tonight.
Yeah, hey, Ms. Church, this is Adrian. Thank you for hanging out with us tonight. You've been wonderful. Glad that you brought about another insight into who we're actually dealing with. Now, as far as, have you been watching the trial?
I have been, yes.
Okay,
I've
quick
done
observation.
My bed, for sure.
Oh,
pardon?
Quick question. Has any of what, because you said you're no longer with that particular group of people anymore, but
group of people? Who are you talking about, brother? Be specific.
Hold on. You came in on the tail end of things. You know what I'm talking about. The church.
We don't know what we. Well, who is she, bro? If you don't mind.
She used to go to Aaron D. Church, okay, affiliated with the church.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Okay, Ms. Church, yes. Ms. Church, again, as far as the teachings, as far as Aaron Dean as a person, was any of the teachings exemplified in what we have seen as far as Aaron Dean's character? Was that part of his?
Okay, so I heard Leon explain. I have agreed with everything the prosecution has said regarding the narcissism. Mm-hmm. And that is very indicative of the culture he was growing up in. And the church environment breeds that arrogance and narcissism. and that I must be right through black and white thinking. They removed psychology, removed logic and reason.
Who in the bad area, cuz? Is that you, Adrian, bro? You need to get somewhere and be stationary, cuz your phone is killing us.
Okay, I'm sorry. Very what did you just say?
Oh, gosh, what did I just say, right? So, the church culture and these churches that he was involved with that I know very well, the culture he was in, it lends itself to narcissism and misogyny. It's a very patriarchal, very man-driven. Women and children are to submit under. Very power over model. Very, very cult-like. He grew up in a culture, not Redeemer Church that was mentioned, but Gail Armstrong comes from IBLP, Institute of Biblical Life Principles, which was instituted by Bill Gothard, which was a man who began this around the country. He's not a church, but it's a movement, a cult-like movement that the Duggars
are. So what they promote, white supremacy?
A majority probably are, in a sense, okay? So I can't answer that for each person. But definitely it's very reconstructionistic, dominionism, in their thinking. So that is definitely the culture in which he was raised in, which I believe I see. Men have a lot of power in those cultures, okay? We left the church entirely. We don't attend church because of the abuse that I saw in these environments. It's like the curtain was pulled back, and I saw into the belly of it, and we can't attend anymore because of the amount of harm that's being done. Things that my husband grew up with as a fundamental Baptist that are perpetuated in the culture that we were in. And so I saw I was not surprised he was a narcissist, but I was very glad to confirm that what I was thinking was validated by that psychologist. So psychology itself, the science of psychology and psychiatry, is removed from these cultures. So
okay,
they would not understand. Go ahead.
Okay, we got to get ready to get out of here, but I do want to ask one final question of you. When we saw Aaron Dean and we understood that he was homeschooled from like K to 12th grade, the first thing I thought is that he was probably poorly socialized, you know, in terms of, you know, if you don't have any interaction with other children and learn how to get along with other people, that affects your personality type. So are most of the people in this group poorly socialized, as we believe that Aaron Dean is or was?
Okay, so this is what I think is so good, because it's a very large homeschool community. I actually organized and ran a lot of coordinating efforts to get kids together at one point with Mansfield homeschoolers. So their parents chose very carefully who they associated them with, who they socialized them with, very like-minded people who were under the same religious construct. Does that make sense?
That makes so much sense. Thank you so much for that. Attorney Wade, close us out tonight. Where are we going with this trial? What do you expect going forward?
First of all, I don't live for the judgment of any other man. At the end of my days, as long as I can look my Savior in the eyes, I did my best. I'm good with that. So that being said, as I've stated before, every jury is its own creature. And the fact that this jury apparently can't come to an agreement on the numbers 1 or 2 to 20. So they're dealing with 18 numbers and probation. They're not dealing with the 99 or life, which is a whole broader spectrum. So something tells me that somewhere in the jury there's conflict that they're trying to work out. And either they will work it out and all 12 will agree to the same sentence. Either those on the low end are going to pull people down or those on the high end are going to pull people up. And if they can't agree, then you're looking at a mistrial. But just like everybody else at this point, all you can do is sit back and wait to see what they do.
Gotcha. So as you told me once, since we've been in the middle of this trial, that sometimes the sentencing phase can last longer than the actual trial is.
Yeah, there's no, as long as the jury is willing to sit back there and hash it out, then the court's going to let them, as long as they're willing. But if they start sending out notes saying, you know, we can't agree, then the judge will send them back. He'll send back, keep arguing. We can't agree, keep arguing, and then they'll do typically what's called an Allen charge, where they'll send back something that says, look, y'all are the ones that are privy with the facts. If we call in another set of people, they're going to get the same information you have, and it'll be a waste of time and effort. But so those of you in the minority, consider the majority's opinion, you know, see if you can work it out. And as defense attorneys, you're hoping that that everybody basically stands their ground. And like if they, because that gives you the mistrial as a defense attorney, you know. But right now, it's just a waiting game. And for the better part of 5 hours, I think you said on the front end, they've been arguing over 2 to 20 and probation. Probation could very well be off the table. And they could be considered anywhere from the number 2 to the number 20. We just don't know. And, you know, so when the buzzer rings, you come in and everybody listens and, you know, we'll all know at the same time.
Okay, last question. Tell us where that probation bar ends. I think they said under 10 years he could get probation. And how does that work?
The maximum amount of probation that anybody can get in the state of Texas is 10 years. Now, I can tell you this. Before the law changed, you used to be able to get probation on murder because I know someone who got convicted of murder. He was with a group of young men, and he wasn't the trigger man, but the jury did convict him of murder, but they also gave him probation because he was the least culpable of the group, but they did convict him. And so for 10 years, he wrote out a murder charge, and he went to college, got his bachelor's, got his master's, you know, married a beautiful woman, and that was enough to change his life. But 10 years is the maximum amount of time anybody can be on probation.
No, I think the question I meant, somebody, I failed to look it up, but they said something about if he gets sentenced to like 10 years or under, some kind of way, that's when they can ask for a probation or something like that. Was it something weird like that?
Lisa had brought this up on one of our other platforms, and at 10 years or less, my mind is tripping right now because it's late.
But it was something like that, right?
Yeah, and my mind is tripping right now. And as soon as, you know, how you just forget stuff in the moment.
I know. But
but tomorrow I'll clarify that for you. Okay. If we have a show tomorrow night or whatever, tomorrow night we may be looking at a verdict.
Is this true?
Who knows?
Because Christmas is Monday, right?
I don't even know.
I know how it feels. I think Christmas is the 25th, whatever day that is. I think that's Monday, somebody said. So the jury's got to be under some degree of pressure to be home for Christmas. So I think we're going to get that. Gerald asked a question in the chat. He says, during the mistrial, we ain't putting that in the atmosphere, but he said, if there was a mistrial, will Dean be free to walk in the street during the mistrial because he's in jail right now?
No, he has been convicted. Again, the mistrial would be to punishment only. And as soon as the jury convicted him, Judge Gallagher revoked his bond and has not let him be free. And so there's no reason to think that the judge would allow him to go free because he's still going to be a convicted felon until the punishment comes. And so because the judge revoked his bond, my anticipation, if there were a mistrial and not, you know, without floating that into the atmosphere, mm-hmm. he would at least spend Christmas in prison.
Gotcha. And then Adrian
not
is
prison,
saying,
but in the Tarrant County Jail.
In the Tarrant County Jail. Adrian is saying appeals can happen with 10 years or less. What are we talking about?
You can have an appeal on any issue that is raised during the trial other than a constitutional issue. Constitutional issues can be raised on appeal. Anything else, you have to preserve the error, meaning you objected timely, you didn't mm-hmm. waive whatever the appealable issue is, and generally speaking, that the issue is material to the outcome of the trial. If you try to appeal on something that's immaterial, and appellate courts give a lot of discretion to juries. Mm-hmm. They really don't like messing with stuff that juries did because the jurors saw every witness, got to rate their character, got to see if they squirmed or, you know, and so they really don't like overturning juries. And so mm-hmm. that doesn't happen all too often. I'm not going to say it's a super rarity. They just don't like doing mm-hmm. it.
Gotcha. And then he said, what about an appeal bond? Y'all, we better get out of here. Last question. Appeal bond. Explain
like,
that, please.
For with Romer. Romer got an appeal bond. And Romer hasn't been, even though he got convicted, his bond wasn't held insufficient. He got a bond while an appeal was pending. And so because an appellate court can basically overturn a case and find you not guilty, you can get an appeal bond and be free while your case is on appeal. Now with Romer, when they appealed, they won upstairs on the ninth floor. And so the mm-hmm. state has then appealed the ninth floor because the ninth floor isn't the Court of Criminal Appeals. In Texas, the Court of Criminal Appeals is the Supreme Court when it comes to criminal matters. And so the mm-hmm. DA's office is appealing to the Court of Criminal Appeals to say, no, Hagerman got it right by including that charge in the jury. But if the Court of Criminal Appeals says, hey, the defense was right, that should not have been included at his trial and it was material, Russell Wilson and Terry Moore have, you know, Russell has already told me, Leon, we're going to retry it. So Roman would be looking at a second trial. Now, you'll have a new DA, and so I don't know if that will have any effect, but in speaking to Russell Wilson, and it was me, him, Terry Moore, at the news interview at the end of that joint, Russell said, nah, we're going to, if we lose on appeal, we're doing it again.
Oh, wow. All right, y'all. No more questions. Thank you so much, Liam, for clarifying all that. Listen, y'all, it's the waiting game. Tick, 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 tick. That's all we got. We're going to pray for the best possible outcome, which would be the 20 years. God is in control. We're going to have faith and believe that if he has brought us this far, he ain't going to leave us now. We're not going to stress because they say if you're going to pray, why worry? And if you're going to worry, why pray? I think there's been a shift. I told y'all that. I really feel that. I feel like the people of Fort Worth put the pressure on this court to make something happen, and they did. Was manslaughter what we wanted? No, but that's what we got. And I just feel like the same will happen in the sentencing phase. I don't think probation will be the case. So I think this city knows that it will erupt if probation is what is handed down. So, y'all, listen, let's continue to pray for Tatiana's family. I think her sister, Amber, is still in the hospital or is very ill. I think little Zion needs to continue to be uplifted in prayer. Her other sister and her brother, Darius. Also, we want to remember Mr. James. We want to always keep him lifted up in prayer because You know, this trial literally tried to put the burden of this whole thing on little Zion and James Smith, and we know better than that. And so we're just going to continue to pray that God covers them and that they will not look like what they've been through, and they will recover from this. So, y'all, listen, we don't know when the verdict's coming in, but we'll be back. If it comes in before Friday, we'll be back to talk about that. When I say the verdict, I'm sorry, when the sentencing comes in, we'll be back to talk about that. Otherwise, we will be back here on Friday night from 7 to 9 p.m. Listen, until then, we'll see you. Good night.